Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. So 4 years ago, Chris Cornell. It's been a long time since I've done a legal update or anything like that. Got one of those coming down the road, but I wanted to kind of dig deep, do something I haven't done in a while. I hadn't really looked at everything in a while. I hadn't looked at the documents, hadn't looked at, you know, Kirsten's statement or anything like that in a while. And I have some questions. I do have some questions that I think are new since the last time I did the, you know, the deepest of deep dives on it. I haven't been, not digging too much, but I haven't been doing episodes about it so much because of the fact that I think that maybe some of you have figured out who the friend is. There is a mutual friend between myself and Vicky. And I feel like if I go too hard sometimes, that I'm putting that friend into a very awkward position. So I do try to keep it to the legal things, but I want to go back and I want to look at this timeline. Part of the problem that we have is that the original leaks from the Detroit Police Department went to, you know, Detroit News. And that's kind of where we've always ended up getting stuff. Other reporters, other newspapers, they essentially just copy and pasted these other articles. And there's a lot of confusion. But what I did when I was digging deeper this time is I have some more questions that I have. So what we're going to do first is we're going to go over the original kind of timeline. And then the first timeline, second timeline, third timeline, and see how things are different and see how things just don't make sense still. It's probably be a two-parter because I want to take my time. So when the Detroit News got it, they had some release materials, incident report, all this kind of stuff, and the statement from Martin Kirsten. And I can't make sense of the statement. One of the things, I'll talk about it later, but it's just been bugging me since I started doing a little bit more research, which I don't think I really noticed the first time, is that the interview with Martin starts at 3:10 in the morning, and it ends at 4:35 in the morning. An hour and 25 minutes. It's 3 pages long, and I'm not talking 3 single-space type pages. Probably if you typed it up, it's a half a page. In an hour and a half. What wasn't said? What wasn't asked? So at 11 o'clock, Soundgarden show ends at the Fox Theater. Police escort accompanies Chris, his bodyguard Martin, to go to the MGM Grand Detroit Hotel. Chris signs autographs. Here is issue number one. In Cornell's suite on the 11th floor, Kirsten gives the singer 2 sleeping pills prescribed for anxiety, heads back to his own room 2 doors down. Now remember, this is all coming from a Detroit News report. We haven't got into the statement, the actual statements from Martin, which we will. And this is where the confusion comes. So these sleeping pills, Ativan. Okay. And then 11:30. Cornell calls Kirsten to say his Apple TV is not working. Kirsten arranges for a hotel staffer to bring a remote that provides access to the hotel's network. That's a big issue. And like I said, we will delve deep into each one of these things. But that is an issue that's something we're flagging for later. At 11:35, Chris speaks by phone to his wife saying he's groggy and repeating, "I'm just tired." He hung up the phone. One of the things that's super important about all of this is really we have Vicky and we have Martin. We have nobody else. And then this is a new thing that I don't think I talked about the first time. Is at midnight, police receive a 911 call from a quote-unquote family friend. And that was according to Michael Woody, director of media relations for the Detroit Police Department. And I think that the only time I've actually seen that in a published thing, rather than Reddit or some Lipstick Alley or whatever, is that it came from Rolling Stone. I don't think I've ever seen it anywhere else. So then at 12:15 in the morning, Kirsten's in his own room watching television when he receives a call from Vicky, who sounded angry because Chris wasn't responding to his phone. So the wife tells Martin to go to the room and check on Chris. Kirsten goes to Cornell's suite. He has a room key, but he can't open the door because Cornell has it locked with a latch. Again, let's kind of footnote that. We're going to come back to that because that's also super important. Yes, there is a picture that the police, you know, released where you can see, okay, it looks like perhaps the latch is broken, that Kirsten kicked it in. But what you don't see is that that deadbolt was engaged. Because don't forget, even if you have the room key, you got to turn that thing, right? So the deadbolt was engaged. If you're breaking down that door, there's going to be a lot more of that door, especially the deadbolt, because it goes straight into the wall. It's going to look more like pictures of the bedroom rather than pictures of the front. So he calls for security, asking for room access, but it's denied because he's not registered to the room. Vicky says, kick it open. So Kirsten does and enters the suite, now encountering a locked bedroom door, calls the hotel operator and has again refused security assistance to access the locked door. Said, I'm going to damage the hotel room. They need to send security. Call 911 and call an ambulance. He then kicks the bedroom door 6 to 7 times before it somehow pops open. Did you see the front door of the hotel room? Did you see the bedroom door? There's a big difference. How did he manage to kick the front door open so easily? The one that's much more solid, the one that's definitely designed to keep intruders out of your room, rather than the much thinner one. Why did it take that many times? Because the deadbolt was engaged, just like the deadbolt would have been engaged in the front. It's not, though. So it makes you think you could pretty easily damage the latch from the inside. Correct? And there's some other things that are missing from this original kind of statement. And about that. And we'll get to those in the second timeline and the third timeline. And you can see how everything changes all the time. So he says, I went inside and the bathroom door was partially open and I could see his feet. Let's put a check mark by that. Because if you think about, okay, well, if he had this carabiner hanging and all this kind of stuff, how's the door going to be open? Because if the door was open, the door's going to swing back and forth. Chris is not going to get any purchase from that. Dude's tall. We already have the elastic band, which is going to give. So you need something to hold it. The door's going to hold it. But it's partially open, could see his feet. Finds Cornell on the bathroom floor, bleeding, a red exercise band around his neck. And this time he said, I loosened the band and applied chest compressions, trying to resuscitate him. 12:56 a.m., a hotel medic arrives on the scene, unties the exercise band, and starts CPR on Cornell. So it was still tied? Why didn't he untie it? He just loosened it. 911 call is placed. A guest was attempting to hang himself, the operator is told. 1 a.m., more first responders arrive, including Detroit police and EMS personnel, and resuscitation efforts continue. We're going to put a little note by that, too, because that's not all who came. And one of the important things about everybody that came kind of puts the whole timeline into question. 1:30 a.m., Cornell's pronounced dead by a doctor on the scene. 1:40 a.m., additional Detroit police authorities are alerted, including homicide investigators and officers on hand secure the scene until they arrive. And the next day, 1:39 in the afternoon, Wayne County Medical Examiner says, hey, it was a suicide. Go back and look at those police photos. The ones that were released. Go look at what time it was actually determined a suicide. 2:35 a.m. Crime, suicide. Go look. It makes no other sense. 2:35, there was nothing else that happened at 2:35. He was pronounced dead by a doctor in the scene at 1:30. If it said 1:30 in the morning, okay, it's 2:35. This is before the interview with Martin has started. That interview didn't start until 3:10 in the morning, concluded at 4:35 in the morning. But at 2:35 a.m., on the cover of this, 2:35 a.m., crime, suicide. It's already been decided, but nobody's been interviewed. How can you make that determination? So here's the next timeline. Like I said, we're going to go through three of them, but you're going to see subtle differences. And when I say, you know, we're going to mark it, we're going to come back to them. We're going to come back to it all. and take each one of those points, point by point. So just minutes after Soundgarden's concert, Chris Cornell back in his hotel room, talking by phone with his wife, and what Vicky Cornell heard alarmed her. She said her husband was slurring his words, sounded groggy, and kept repeating, "I'm just tired." And this is according to a family statement and a police report obtained by the Detroit News. But it's a different news organization using a different timeline. She asked the band's bodyguard to check on Cornell, who busted into the room, made a gruesome discovery. The rocker was on the bathroom floor, blood running from his mouth, red exercise band around his neck. Within 2 hours, he was pronounced dead. The police report filed by officers from the Detroit Police Gaming Unit. This is one of the things. This is the first time we've heard Detroit Police Gaming, and we didn't hear it in that first timeline. Because the MGM's a casino. They got police everywhere. If you call 911 at midnight, family, friend, welfare check, the police have tons of people there. They can send somebody up to the room. Now, what happened in those 2 hours, this dispute between the family that says, hey, he wouldn't have taken his own life, and the coroner's office, which said, hey, it's a hanging. And this timeline, it says Cornell walked off the stage with his bandmates about 11:15 p.m. And that within 15 minutes, he's back in his room, where this is how things get messed up. Where Martin Kirsten helped fix the star's computer and gave him 2 doses of an anti-anxiety medicine. So now it's not sleeping pills, it's an anti-anxiety medicine, and he helped fix the star's computer. Well, it's Apple TV. You know, it's a device you put into the computer, put it to the TV. So that's different. Already we got something different. At 11:35 p.m., Cornell was on the phone with his wife. And one of the things, because I'm pretty sure I talk about it later, but I want to bring it up. Just that point. Because later we're going to have Martin saying, I left the room at exactly 11:34. And then Vicky calls at 11:35. That's some incredible timing, isn't it? She knew just down to the minute. Calls Martin at 12:15, goes to the room, finds the door locked, kicks the door open, finds the second door leading to the bedroom suite, also latched, kicked that door open too, and found Chris. And at this time, the first statement from Vicky and her attorney, Kirk Basick, they said the family needs the result of toxicology tests to be sure what happened to him. They said the quote from the statement at the time was, the family believes that if Chris took his life, he did not know what he was doing and that drugs or other substances may have affected his actions. And Vicky said, hey, I spoke to my husband before. That's important. Later on, that's important. Before and after the concert. And noticed during the later conversation that he was slurring his words. Her quote was, he was different. When he told me he may have taken an extra Ativan or two, I contacted security and asked that they check on him. Is she talking about Martin? Is she talking about security at the hotel? Is she talking about the midnight 911 call from a family member? I contacted security. That's plural. They didn't contact Chris's bodyguard. I contacted security. According to the police report, Kirsten gave Cornell 2 Ativan pills, which victim takes for anxiety. Let's think about that for a second, too. Martin giving Chris the Ativan pills. After hearing from Vicky, Kirsten walked down. Now here's where we also get screwed up, because reporters are not really reporting. They're just kind of changing words, and it's muddying everything, and it's screwing everything up. Kirsten walked 2 doors down to Cornell's suite, to which he had a key, but found the door latched. Kirsten called security from a hotel phone in the hallway. But let's put a little footnote next to that one, stating he needs to get into the room to check on the victim. Security stated they can't let him in the room because he's not registered to that room. So at this time, Kirsten kicked in the door with his feet, went to the bedroom door, latched him engaged on this door also. Calls again for security, but could not gain access to the room. So he kicked in the bedroom door, found the victim laying on the bathroom floor. MGM medic arrives at the room at 12:56. Don't forget, casino, lots of people. It's not like a normal hotel where, oh, do you have a hotel doctor on staff? No, but it's a casino. People have heart attacks, people get sick. You have to have a medic. Feel like she could have got there a lot sooner than 12:56. Again, the timeline just screws me in the head. Every time I do go into this. Jones untied the red exercise band from the victim's neck, began CPR. EMS Unit 42 was at the scene by 1 a.m. An EMT also unsuccessfully performed CPR, according to the report. 1:30 a.m., victims pronounced dead. Homicide detectives arrived at the room and began their investigation while another officer phoned Cornell's wife to break the news he'd been found dead. Put a little footnote next to that, too, because that's not exactly 100% everything that was going on. It makes it sound like she was waiting by the phone at home. Oh, what? I have no idea what's going on. I'm just waiting here hoping that somebody calls. And in the report said, victim's wife stated victim is a recovered drug addict. So let's go to the next timeline. And this is, you know, something else that is completely different from the other. It said, when Soundgarden frontman Chris Cornell was found on the bathroom floor of his suite in the MGM Grand Detroit, investigators didn't immediately rule out homicide. Well, that's super important. And is it true? Because you've ruled that it was suicide at 2:35 in the morning. You haven't interviewed the last person to see him alive. You didn't do that till 3:10 in the morning and finished that at 4:35 in the morning. Evidence found at the scene early Thursday, including the way Cornell's body was positioned and the red rubber exercise band secured tightly around his neck, suggested he had committed suicide. Nobody ever saw it tightly around his neck. Only Martin. Nobody else did. The medic, the MGM medic, she untied it, but apparently was already loosened, so nobody did see it secured tightly around his neck. But that's why they ruled the death was suicide by hanging. And the medical examiner spokesperson said, hey, we don't have any new information. To rule out the possibility, this is another footnote we need to have, that someone else had killed Cornell, detectives poured through the hotel surveillance video, which was trained on the corridor outside of his 11th floor room. They found nobody had entered or exited the suite after his bodyguard left around 11:35 p.m., according to the source. I hate those two sentences. Because it leads to 6 million other questions, those two sentences. Don't you think, if you wanted just to have this all tidied up, that you would release the video of Martin kicking down the door? I think that that would be a pretty interesting video. I think that the whole world would like to see that. I would. They found nobody had entered or exited the suite. That kind of doesn't go with the later statement, which I know I talked about the first time that I ever did the deep dive. But what about this IT person? Or somebody from the hotel who was sent up with the remote control for the Apple TV. Did that person all of a sudden not come? Did Chris call down and say, I didn't need them? Wouldn't that be a person that you'd want to talk to? Because isn't that possibly the last person to see him alive? I hate those two sentences so much. And it even says, the last person to see a victim alive is generally considered a person of interest in a potential homicide case. But because Cornell's door was locked from the inside, investigators concluded that the bodyguard could not have killed him and got out of the room, which had no other exits. Again, go back to the pictures of the front door. Yes, the latch is bent. I give you that. But there is no other damage. And if that thing had been bolted, there would have been so much damage to everything. Meanwhile, just show us the video. Him knocking it over, coming in, show us that. It's super easy if you're in the room to do that. It would have been so, it's so easy to do something to the to that middle bedroom door because it's thinner. And, you know, I had to kick it 6 or 7 times, which is why it's so damaged. It's so bad. And then you have the outside door, which is not damaged at all, except for a part that's on the inside. The two should look similar, but they don't. And if it took him 6 or 7 kicks from that inside door, it's going to take him 20 kicks to get through that first one. Kirsten told police he briefly visited his boss's suite to fix his computer shortly after the show. Again, fixing the computer, but that's not what it's about. And then, according to a timeline provided by the singer's wife, Vicki Cornell, and a police report, says she spoke with her husband a few minutes after Kirsten left the room. More like 1 minute. 1 minute. Called Kirsten after the conversation, expressed concern about his demeanor. She asked Kirsten to check on Cornell. He walked 2 doors down. Knock wasn't answered. He tried the room key, but found the door was locked from the inside. Called security from a phone on the wall. Now it's on the wall. It was a phone in the hall, a phone on the wall. I feel like I'm in a Dr. Seuss book. Stating he needs to get into the room to check on a victim. And remember, it's not a phone in the hall. It's not a phone on the wall. Because there wasn't a phone on the wall that he could use to call. Kicked in the bedroom door, found the victim laying on the bathroom floor, blood running from his mouth, red exercise band around his neck. It's unclear why security staff didn't open the door or whether it's prohibited by the hotel security protocols. And the MGM Grand wasn't commenting. So he calls security after finding Cornell on the floor. 12:15 to 12:56, 41 minutes. A casino medic. They're in the building. They are actually in the building. So he calls downstairs, says, I'm going to kick in this bedroom door. It's going to be damaged. You guys should send somebody up. What time do you think that is? 12:30 or something? So it takes a half an hour for this casino medic. Somebody's destroying a room and telling you. Think that that would be something that would be hurried up. A casino officer notified a surgeon at the 3rd precinct, which has jurisdiction over the neighborhood. That includes the MGM Grand. Because all the Detroit police are already in the MGM, the ones who would do the casino. One of the things that I've wondered a couple, you know, I saw the writing on the airplane ticket, the one that had been torn up. And I wondered if that number meant anything. I really did. And I looked everywhere. I don't think it does, but that number bugs me. It's always in the back of my head. Let's look at, you know, his behavior leading up to the week. This is something that I believe was leaked by Vicki. I remember at this time, I'm not sure about the life insurance policy. What about suicide? Ooh, can't have suicide. Because then we might not get paid. That kind of thing. So she's leaking stuff to the tabloids. Or her mom is. Somebody from the family. Because the family's really going down this road that, hey, he wasn't suicidal. Which I agree. They didn't believe him to be suicidal. Think that the prescription drugs found in the system may have impacted his mental state. You know, there was this doctor interviewed, a guy named Benjamin Nordstrom, who's an addiction psychiatrist. He says it's hard to overstate how unpredictable the effects of mixing various mind-altering substances can be. Some of these combinations that involve sedative drugs can lead to levels of impairment that are far out of proportion to what would have happened if the drugs were taken separately. In addition, suicide is nearly impossible to predict for families or professionals alike. Dude had been taken for a year and a half. But just don't forget that on May 4th, 2 weeks before his death, he pushed his flight from Atlanta back a day over safety concerns about flying in inclement weather because he didn't want to die. The next week, May 9th, made a similar choice after hearing his flight from Tuscaloosa, Alabama was delayed due to mechanical issues. He was nervous to fly due to potential plane issues. Drove a rental car over 7.5 hours to his destination. Why? Because he didn't want to die. He valued his life. And he had made plans to perform at a concert for World Refugee Day on June 20th. With the UN Human, the Rights Commission. And then finally, about this time, the family's telling this version of the stories to the tabloids. They're not giving their names, but it is the family telling this version. On the night of his death, the insider adds that Cornell asked both security and an engineer to help him get his Apple TV system to work around 11:45 p.m. This is from the family. The insider asked both security and an engineer. Where's this engineer? Why are we at 11:45 p.m.? Weren't we at 11:30? Because Martin left at 11:34. Because Vicky called Chris at 11:35. So when is this 11:45? And where is this engineer? How come the police never found the engineer? How come they never asked? Never in the report. Says the source, quote, Chris was so adamant about getting his TV to work, he called for backup assistance when security was unable to fix it. Again, this is how you know that it's Vicky talking. She's the insider. Where did we hear security used as a plural instead of a singular? From her own statement. For backup assistance when security was unable to fix it. Someone so persistent about fixing a TV so they can watch their favorite show, focusing on something so mundane, is not a sign of someone planning to take their life. Now, I will give you this option. It could be Vicky's attorney who wrote the statement, because the attorney could have written the statement for Vicky earlier. But it's the same person, whether it's Vicky or this attorney. When security, it's one person. And it's that same plural thing. That's the giveaway right there. That the same person wrote the two statements. And toxicology report. Several drugs in his system. Don't forget, the first toxicology report that was released, TMZ got it. And TMZ is going to be very important to this later in their narrative. And what they choose to do in a very awful way. So he had drugs in the system at the time of death. And this is what the tabloids are reporting. At the time of death. Including Narcan. No. That was not at the time of death. It was after death. Buda, I can't ever say that one. The sedative. And then Ativan. And a decongestion. Cornell had ingested 4 tablets of the Ativan. We're sure about that. We know that. And it can cause worsening depression and thoughts of self-harm. In rare cases, don't forget, he had been taking it a long time. In a statement where she actually gave her name to People magazine, Vicky said, many of us who know Chris well noticed that he wasn't himself during his final hours and that something was very off. Final hours? You talked to him in his last 15 minutes. Final hours? This is, again, going to the narrative that is going to be brought forward. We're going to make it seem like this guy was off his rocker. Her quote was, we have learned from this report that several substances were found in his system. After so many years of sobriety, this moment of terrible judgment seems to have completely impaired and altered his state of mind. Something clearly went terribly wrong, and my children and I are heartbroken and are devastated that this moment can never be taken back. Where's the stuff where he broke his sobriety that you didn't know about? Stuff was over the counter. And then the Ativan. Which you knew about. You know about the Ativan. How is this breaking sobriety? It's a narrative that they're trying to set up and that they use TMZ to help with. The family source notes that even during Cornell's darkest days of drug abuse, when he admitted himself into Promises Treatment Center in Malibu in 2002, he did not reveal suicidal tendency, nor did he show any signs of depression in the final days leading up to his passing. And Vicky said in a statement, a bunch of statements, she was everywhere, just talking to any press that she could. But the problem is that when you're out there speaking to the press as much as she was, and you don't really know everything, or the stories keep changing later, when other people go back and look at your statements, they're like, what? She said, I know that he loved her children, would not hurt them by intentionally taking his own life. And speaking of that Ativan, the prescribed Ativan, we had the settlement earlier this month, confidential settlement, where the Vicky and the children had accused a Beverly Hills doctor of over-prescribing mind-altering drugs, leading to his 2017 suicide. It was filed in November 2018, and the plaintiffs alleged that Dr. Robert Coblin prescribed the drugs, most notably Ativan, to Cornell beginning in September 2015. So for 2 years, he was taking a year and a half. And continued to do so without ever actually examining the singer. Could have talked. You know how so much telemedicine and everything going on right now? And I'm not just even talking about pandemic, although that is accelerating it. You know, that like that Roman stuff and all these other companies that are trying to get you to take pills, and they have a doctor talk to you online, ask some questions. It's not as necessary to see somebody in person anymore. You know? And it says, after years of litigation and settlement negotiations, plaintiffs and the doctor have reached a confidential settlement agreement to resolve all claims. Unfortunately, as with many celebrity cases, this action has also attracted the attention of troubled individuals who have harassed plaintiffs, including by threatening the life and safety of the kids. And that's never good. Don't threaten the life of kids. But I'll say that Vicky and Tony, the grandma, come on. They weren't exactly friendly to people either. In July, they have to go before court because the plaintiffs are minors. It's just, you know, Ativan is, you know, used for anxiety. It can cause withdrawal and or addiction sometimes. And the risk is higher if you have a substance use disorder, such as overuse of or addiction to drugs and alcohol. But that wasn't the case here. Essentially, you know, he had some notos that he took, like caffeine kind of thing, and the Ativan. And the lawsuit said that Coblin allegedly, negligently, and repeatedly prescribed dangerous mind-altering controlled substances to Chris, which impaired his cognition, clouded his judgment, and caused him to engage in dangerous and impulsive behaviors that he was unable to control, costing him his life. It was a year and a half. A year and a half. And was Chris in charge of the prescription anyway? Ooh. Something to think about, right? Where's the picture of that Ativan? Because maybe Martin had it. At the time of his death, Mr. Cornell had everything to live for, was planning a future of recordings, performances, and continued work as a charitable activist, according to the lawsuit. Things have changed since that lawsuit was filed, because, you know, future of recordings, because they were at Soundgarden, and I think that they would change the statement now. The doctor prescribed him more than 940 doses during the last 20 months of his life. Okay. Well, let's think about that. He was allowed, you know, Martin gave him two a day. So if you do that every day, 365 days, 730. Seems about right. 940 seems about right. All right. He didn't complain about the last, you know, the 20 months before when he was taking two a day. So now let's read the witness statements, because this is, like I said, interview starts 3:10 in the morning, end time 4:35 in the morning. Investigator Charles Weaver taking it in the field at the scene. Martin Kirsten, 45 years old, 6'3", 210, big guy. Owns Battalion Protection Group. And, you know, he did actually, what, last year, I think, gave a one-sentence statement when he was doing a podcast or something. Question. Do you understand that this statement is being taken in conjunction with a death investigation? Yeah. Do you understand that providing false or misleading information regarding this incident could result in you being charged? Yes. What can you tell me about the incident that resulted in the death of Christopher Cornell? Christopher is the lead singer of Soundgarden. We completed a show at the Fox Theater at approximately, hold on, gotta go to page 2. Oh, you're telling me that's all that was on page 1 and this thing took an hour and a half? That's exactly what I'm telling you. Second page. At 11 p.m., we had a police escort back to the hotel. Chris signed autographs, and then we come up to the room. I gave him his 2 sleeping pills and went back to my room. What happened next? Chris called me and said that Apple TV was not working. Think about this. This next part. I arranged for hotel IT to bring the remote that provides access to the hotel's network. That was around 11:34 p.m. He doesn't actually say that he went to Chris's room in this sense. This is directly to the police. And remember, this is the police report that the newspaper who got the leak was basing everything off of. Did they actually see the document? They just inferred that Chris went over there when they saw this? But that was around 11:34 p.m. So then, 1 minute later. So did Martin actually go into the room and leave? And remember, police said, oh, we saw him on the video leaving at 11:35 p.m. We saw Martin. Where is this IT guy? Where? This will bug me till the day I die, that part. Because there's never been a good answer. It will literally haunt me and never make me believe anything that's said in this case. This is directly to the police. What happened next? I was in my room and was watching television when I received a phone call from his wife, Vicky. She sounded angry because he wasn't responding to his phone. She told me to go to the room and check on Chris. Did you go to the room? I came to the room. Wouldn't it be I went to the room? Again, you know, it's a police detective writing things down, but done it for a while. I came to the room. I don't like that. And was unable to get because of the interior latch. I went back to my room and called for hotel security to come and open the door. So here, I went back to my room. Well, all these other news reports, which again were based on a police report, said that he used a hotel phone in the hall, on the wall, 2 separate ones. Was there a different police report at some point that they were relying on? Was it somebody overhearing something and then told the news? They refused, saying that it wasn't my room, although I told them that he was my employer and that I had a key. What did you do next? I told Vicky that they wouldn't come open the door, and she told me to kick it open. I did. Upon entry, I found the bedroom door locked. I called the hotel operator and told her that I needed security to open the bedroom door. They refused again. And I told them that I'm going to damage the hotel room and that. And again, by the way, Martin has signed this, and it is also dated, and it's also with the time, 4:35 a.m. So it's not just on the front page, it's on every page. Page 3. Need to send security, call 911, and call an ambulance. What happened next? I kicked the bedroom door. And by the way, how did he know that they were going to need an ambulance? Maybe Chris just didn't want to answer the door. I kicked the bedroom door 6 to 7 times before it somehow popped open. If you're the detective, did you ask, well, how many kicks did it take you to get that front door open? Because, God, that's a solid door, and this is an interior door. Probably not even made completely out of wood. I went inside, and the bathroom door was partially opened, and I could see his foot. What was your next action? I saw the band around his neck. He was on the floor. I forced the band from wherever it was hanging and attempted to loosen the band from around his neck and began chest compressions with, I believe, my left hand. Okay, let's stop for a second. I forced the band from wherever it was hanging. Well, where was it hanging from? From wherever it was hanging? So it's off. So he's laying on the floor. That's the thing, he's laying on the floor. But later, and we'll talk about it, oh, by the position of the body and all this kind of stuff. What happened next? The hotel EMT came in. So how long was he giving chest compressions? The hotel EMT comes in, directs me to stand aside, and she began working on him. Other personnel started arriving, hotel security, medical staff, and EMS, and Detroit PD. What happened next? They enacted life-saving protocols for a long time, maybe an hour. That's a weird thing to say, life-saving protocols. Then who I believe was a doctor called the time of death. Is there anything more than you can add about this incident? Here, this is important, where we flagged this earlier. Vicky was on the phone the whole time asking for updates. She told me that she called the front desk and they hung up on her. It was a female. She called back a couple minutes later and a male answered saying that it was, he was just, you know, the first that he was hearing about the incident. The incident as in what's going on upstairs? This is a part I don't understand either. Remember, the homicide detective called to tell Vicky the news. She must have already known it from Martin, though. And Vicky's on the phone the whole time asking for updates. So she knows that there's police there, everything like that. And then she told me that she called the front desk and they hung up on her. Like a grievance. It was a female. I don't know who it was. I called back a couple minutes later. Why are you calling the front desk? You already know that everybody's up there. Now, how long did it take me to read that? With even my interruptions? 5 or 6 minutes? Maybe 10? Hour and a half. Hour and 25 minutes, if we want to be exact. Hour and 25 minutes they spent, and that's all they got. Like 12 sentences. Something like that. Now, before we go, I'm going to read you the medical examiner's report. It's quick. It is my opinion that the death was caused by hanging. Per the investigative report and the police report, the decedent was found partially suspended by a resistance exercise band in his hotel room. Partially suspended by a resistance exercise band in his hotel room by his security guard. Thank you for not using a plural. The security guard had to kick in the decedent's locked hotel room door and locked bedroom door. The security guard found the decedent on the bathroom floor. Okay, so he's on the bathroom floor. So not really hanging. With a resistance exercise band around his neck, which was looped around itself, using the resistance exercise band handle. The opposite end of the resistance exercise band was attached to a metal clip device. Like a carabiner. Well, if he used that, then the door would have had to been closed. We wouldn't have been able to see a foot, because it was placed over the top of the bathroom door. The security guard released the resistance exercise band from the top of the door, loosened the end of the resistance exercise band around the decedent's neck, and began resuscitative efforts. Despite resuscitation, the decedent was pronounced dead at the scene. The autopsy was most significant for a ligature, furrow mark of the neck, congestion of the head and neck above the furrow mark, a bunch of stuff I can't pronounce. All consistent with hanging, partially suspended by the resistance exercise band. There were no other injuries or any diseases present that contributed to death. And then says what the things were in the toxicology. But something that's a little bit different than even the tabloids reported, or TMZ, because remember they were the first, they skipped the caffeine part. They skipped all these things, and they said these drugs did not contribute to the cause of death. This guy was big. 6'3", 180 pounds. And also, when you look at the narrative summary. And here's the thing. I know everybody talks about the back of the head thing. I've seen the still photos. Could be. But right now, we have the coroner not even mentioning that, really. And it's, you know, it's a bunch of detailed kind of stuff and everything. Big guy. 6'3", 180. slurring, all this. Have you seen a carabiner? Have you seen all this? What you have to do? All these different things to get it to hook up? Did he have time between when Vicky said that they got off the phone and before Martin got in there? Man, that's quick. He must have practiced this 100 times to do it that quickly in those conditions. And that's how we're going to leave it until part 2, which is coming up tomorrow, because I want to talk about it.